You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Science is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
Yep. You can't. No, we're not fucking off. Let's not do that. I can't do that every week. How are you, Alan?
I'm very well, Lillian. How are you?
Good, thank you. Good. Thanks for coming in today, as usual.
My pleasure.
Supermoon. The supermoon is happening tonight.
Well, it's not just a supermoon.
Okay.
It's a super blue blood moon and total lunar eclipse combo.
What? So there's like, okay, there's four different things going on here. Is that what you're saying?
Pretty much. So we have to explain them all.
Okay.
Obviously. Okay, so as you correctly said, it's a supermoon. And that means that it is pretty much at its closest point to Earth. So when the moon goes around the Earth, it doesn't quite go around in a circle. It's a little bit of an ellipsoid. So therefore, it varies its distance from the Earth. And so therefore, it looks bigger or smaller depending on how far away from the Earth it is. And tonight, it's a super full moon, and that's around about apparently 6.8% larger than usual. So
wow,
that should be good.
I read somewhere it was quite a bit brighter, wasn't it?
Yes, indeed. Obviously, yep. When it's closer, it's brighter as well. So it's going to be bright in the sky until the eclipse starts. Now it's
What? So there's a supermoon, but then we're going to miss it?
Well, it's going to... No. Hang on.
Okay, I'm getting ahead. All right, I'm sorry.
Well, it's a blue moon as well. So what's a blue moon mean? Any ideas? Because they talk about once in a blue moon. That's the old saying.
That's to do with... No, Mike said it on breakfast this morning because I talked about it.
Isn't it two full moons in a...
That's the one. Two very full moons.
Because all the photos I've seen online advertising, you know, look at the moon tonight, are all photoshopping it so it's blue and red at the same time.
No. So you're absolutely right. A blue moon is when you get two full moons in the same calendar month. And that happens around every 2.5 years, apparently. So things just get a little bit out of sync because the moon goes around the Earth every 29-point-something days.
Nothing to do with the colour blue?
No, absolutely nothing to do with the blue.
The blue blood moon. Why is it blood?
Okay, so it's blood because there's going to be a total lunar eclipse as well. And so the total lunar eclipse is when the Earth is in front of the moon, between the moon and the sun. And so then what happens is that... it's right behind the Earth, and the sun's rays get refracted from the Earth's atmosphere, and that colours the moon blood red.
Okay.
And so that's what you see in lunar eclipses. Like when you have a solar eclipse, everything just blacks out.
Gotcha.
Okay.
I was confused on that. Right.
But in this case, we're going to be sort of redded out. So the moon doesn't disappear completely. You just see this beautiful blood red colour as totality goes across, and then it just clears up. So... it's pretty good, and this is the first one, I think, for about 150-odd years.
I feel
something like
I've
that.
Seen a big red moon before.
Yeah, I'm sure you have. The lunar eclipses are fairly common,
okay.
So they're more common than the solar eclipses. So chances are you will have seen a lunar eclipse before.
But all of these things happening together...
at the same time for the first time in 150 years, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, portents, earthquakes, plagues, pestilence probably, you know.
All of these things are going to happen?
Probably. Probably, okay. I'd say.
It's pretty spooky when the moon goes red, regardless of what
it
you
is,
believe.
But funnily enough, you know, it goes to being its normal colour again, you know, so.
Alan's sarcasm is pretty on point. Can I ask? You probably are going to tell us this. I jump ahead, my mum would tell me off. But what time is it going to happen?
I was just going to tell you that. So I've got it all written down here. So it starts at 11:50 p.m. and totality is at 1:51 a.m. and that lasts for about a couple of hours. And in fact, it's not really a blue moon because the full moon actually occurs in New Zealand at 2 a.m.
So
in the other parts of the world,
news.
It's a blue. Yeah, fake news. Absolutely. So elsewhere in the world, it is actually a blue moon, but in New Zealand, just because we're ahead of the game, in terms of the clock. So it's not really a blue
moon. Okay, so we have to wait until 1:50 to see it? Or?
Well, no, you'll see it just sort of starting to go red, and then you'll see the maximum sort of red colour about 1:50.
Oh, okay.
And that will persist for a couple of hours or so.
Oh, okay. So if we're up in the early hours of the morning,
yeah.
Anybody?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Earth's big compared to the moon.
True.
Yes.
Forgot about that one.
So that's pretty cool.
That's very cool.
Keep an eye out for that tonight, folks.
Or stay awake. And head high or... Is it going to matter where you are?
Shouldn't matter where you are, okay. As long as you can see it. Yeah.
Apparently it might be a little bit overcast this evening in Auckland, though.
Oh, jeez, don't tell us that.
Okay. The second topic we're going to discuss, it's a little bit contentious.
Yes, indeed.
The Humanity Star.
Yeah, so this sort of made the news last week, where Rocket Lab, so they're sort of the American firm who are firing rockets, I guess, from New Zealand. So this is another launch place.
I didn't know
New
that
Zealand.
Was a thing.
And so they have launched this satellite that they call the Humanity Star. And I think this was the first successful launch of a space vehicle from New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
And so they put up this thing, which is about, I don't know, sort of about a meter by a meter sort of thing. Sort of spherical, but it's sort of covered in mirrors and stuff. So 65 sort of reflecting mirrors. And that's going to reflect the sun's light. And so it is going to be rather bright in the sky. And you're going to see that going across every sort of 90 or so minutes conditions.
Whoa. Orbits.
Yeah. So it's in orbit. At the moment, it's in very low orbit, so apparently it can't be seen just yet. But they're going to start up a website and show you when it will be visible to the naked eye. And apparently it will be very visible to the naked eye.
Mm.
And this has caused a few problems with a few of the professional astronomers out there who really don't like the thought of, I guess, sort of night sky pollution. So in the same way as... you don't sort of put big observatories and stuff in the middle of like Auckland or something like that because of the light pollution. For the same sort of reason, you don't want sort of bright things in the sky as well because they can sort of disrupt the view of telescopes and stuff up there. So there has been a bit of controversy about this. Now, the CEO of the company that put it up, his quote was, "My hope is that all of those looking up at it will look past it to the vast expanse of the universe and think a little differently about their lives, actions, and what is important to humanity." Lofty goals, but you can do that in the absence of this bloody thing. You can just look up at the sky and just wonder about infinity, you know?
I think there's a lot of confusion as well. I've heard a lot of people saying that, you know, why did they send up this thing? It seems like a lot of money just to send up this thing. They did send up other satellites with this payload. It wasn't just the Humanity Star.
I'm not sure about that.
Because it was the first launch. They set up one commercial satellite, which was a small satellite.
Okay. No, you're onto it.
Okay, but so back to that point in terms of this, you know, the moral goal behind this Humanity Star. Is this supposed to bring us humans together?
Well, according to those words, I guess. But apparently, it's not going to last up there very long. It's in quite a low orbit or something, and it's going to come crashing down to Earth.
What?
Not too distant. Because you can. It's not going to be there for very long.
Because you can.
Well, I guess it's sort of proof of principle and all that sort of stuff. And if you want to launch commercial satellites from New Zealand, which is obviously what these folks want to do, then, you know, you've got to
and
show that it can be done.
And fuck off a whole bunch of scientists.
Yeah, well, you don't want to fuck off scientists. Oof, I tell you.
But, okay, so it's not very helpful.
No, not particularly.
It's just pretty.
Doesn't do anything. It just looks good.
Doesn't really
do
anything.
It's a space disco ball.
And again, from what I read, there's some artist, quote, I'm doing the air quotes here, folks, artist in the States who wants to put up some sort of art satellite sort of thing that's in the shape of a giant teardrop or something, apparently. So God forbid that should ever
happen. Do we not ruin enough stuff here? Already.
Well, you've got to have art.
I'm not saying that we don't need art.
We don't need art.
I'm
in space,
an artistic
really,
family
probably.
Myself,
yeah.
But
yep.
I'm saying we're on Earth. Mm-hmm. But should we just?
I think there's art.
Minimize
there
our
enough, isn't there? I mean, it's just totally awesome.
Minimize
in the real
our footprint,
sense of the
maybe.
Word. Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. Mm. But you know, stick to watching the space station come over. That's always cool, and you can see that, and that's bright enough, really. Mm. So.
Okay, well, that's very interesting. Our last topic on this space theme day, that's the 60th anniversary of the first US satellite.
Yes, yeah, which hasn't made the news, funnily enough. I haven't seen that anywhere, but I think this is quite an auspicious occasion because those of you who can remember back, and I can't, he said rapidly, to about 1957, when the Russians launched Sputnik, to the great surprise of the Americans, and so therefore the Americans were told, oh, come on, you know, we've got to catch up here. And so it was a mere sort of 3 or 4 months later the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California was told, right, you've got to make the satellite, you've got to operate it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California was run by a guy by the name of Dr. William Pickering, who was a Kiwi, who was born in Wellington. Yeah. And he was born in Wellington in 1910, and he went and did his PhD in Caltech in the States. And he became, you know, one of the most important men in really sort of Cold War America, I guess. He was sort of right up there in NASA and everything as head of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. So that's kind of cool that a Kiwi had something to do with the first US satellite that was launched 60 years ago today. And I think that's a wonderful thing. So those of you, again, who live on the North Shore, you might know William Pickering Drive out there. So that's who he... Well, that's who that was named after.
Sorry, I'm weird and curious. So I just looked up the first what was the date of the first flight of an aircraft? So the
1903.
Time,
yeah.
1903. Yep. I should have just asked you, Alan.
December 17th.
Knowing Alan Blackman.
Orville and Wilbur. Yeah.
Well, it's a similar time between 1957
and now. Yeah.
And the first flight between that and now.
Yeah. Yep.
The progress of humanity is
there
astounding.
There it goes. That's great. You're in wonderment. I like that. Yeah,
it is. I don't need to look at a flying disco ball in the sky to
be in wonder.
Yeah.
No. I think you're absolutely right. That it is astonishing the advances that we've made in things.
Yeah.
So yeah. No, very very cool. And today is
also part of that first. Well.
It wasn't part, but it's the same day. So again, January the 31st, 3 years later, the first primate went into space. And this was a cute little fella by the name of Ham. And you've got to Wikipedia this guy because
there's a pretty cute photo.
Oh, the cute photo of him in his little space suit. Oh, my God. So.
I don't know how to feel about this. I don't know, because did the chimpanzee live?
Whoa.
Ham okay?
Okay, well, what was the first animal in space, folks? Here we go.
A dog. Another,
very good. Called?
Oh, man.
Quiz night.
You'll have to tell me.
On Sputnik 2, which was after Sputnik 1, funnily enough, they sent up a dog called Laika.
Okay.
The Russians. And they made no provision for sort of re-entry, shall we say. So poor old Laika went up there and patted away and everything. And for many years, apparently, they thought that she just sort of starved to death. But then apparently what happened was she overheated or something because of the heat shield or something.
God.
Yeah, so she lasted about 6 hours. No, they didn't re-enter.
Oh.
So, yeah.
So they just stayed up there.
She just died. So they sent her to her death, unfortunately, which is pretty awful. But Ham, the two-year-old chimpanzee who was born...
So did the Americans learn from that or...?
I don't know. I don't know how sort of... secret that was or anything.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure back in those days, but they obviously wanted to test out sort of manned space flight, person space flight. So
thank you, Alan.
There we go. And so they sent a primate up as the next best thing and recovered Ham. And it was after a flight of, it was very short actually, it was only about 16 or so minutes long, the flight. And
but it went out of the Earth's atmosphere?
No, not out of the... Okay. Well, it was suborbital, so it wasn't quite high enough to orbit, but it was in space, as it were. And what they taught Ham to do was a series of rewards. So it had to pull a lever at a given signal, and if it pulled it within 5 seconds of that signal, then he'd get a banana treat.
Okay.
And if it didn't, they'd get an electric shock on the feet, which I thought was a bit rough, but how else do you train a chimp, I guess? Right. That's what they did. And so they timed him on Earth, and then they put him up into space, and they found that that it could still do it, and the timing was only marginally slower than it was on Earth. So basically they showed from this that, you know, that primates can carry out tasks up there, so, they're obviously okay. And this was one of 40 primates that was originally selected, so they had a choice of 40, and they whittled it down to 6 and everything, and they put them in all these machines and stuff and saw who operated the best.
And prepared Ham. Them for going?
Yes, yeah. And Ham had his little space suit on
and he won, I guess.
So it's sort of like the X Factor in space sort of thing, really.
I feel like they just didn't have a choice in the matter, though.
But then it was okay because he lived a long and fruitful life and is now buried out in, I think, Nevada or Arizona, sort of, at the Museum of Space Flight or something like that. So,
it's crazy to think, and I've never really thought this before, because maybe it's a generational thing, I don't know. But it's just crazy to think that there's like this point in history where there was no idea about what would happen if you sent someone into space. Mm-hmm. You know, that, yep. they could boil alive or mm-hmm. be eaten by space ants or something.
Yes. Yep, yep.
So
those people who were doing all of that stuff, they were the bravest people. Yeah. I tell you, honestly, you know. And then just a mere sort of 3 months after Ham went up, then Yuri Gagarin went up.
Wow.
And came back. Now, again, there's lots of rumours that the Russians had sent people up before that and they kind of got the re-entry angle wrong. They bounced off the atmosphere and bye-bye. But who knows? But, yeah, there's some conspiracy theories.
Who
knows?
They
reckon there's a couple of Italians or something, they reckon they got some radio signal from this Russian craft prior to this.
Oh, that's interesting.
But who would know? But anyway, Ham, yeah, look up Ham on Wikipedia because this picture of him in his little spacesuit, very cute.
Hmm.
Poster material, even, for your wall, Ellen.
Somebody should blow this up, but absolutely, yes.
Poster, okay. All right, well.
And he did get a bruised nose when the spacecraft splashed down.
Okay, we're stopping now.
It's all going so well.
But that's not bad. You get to fly around, you know.
All right.
You get to go to space and you get a bruised nose out of it. That's
do you
cool.
want to go to space, Alan? Is that something you'd want to do?
I always did when I was a kid, but I don't think I've got the constitution for it, really. All this spinning around at bloody 5Gs or something. Like, no, I'm not really
I'm all
made
right,
for that.
Thanks, I'm
yeah,
good.
Yeah, yeah, I'm good. I'll
you
just,
will?
I'll just look.
I mean, if someone offers to pay.
For free, eh? Yeah, yeah. Do it for free. Why not?
I'll do one of those Virgin Galactic things.
Yeah, I think Branson's offering. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, you've got to pay a couple of $100,000, I think, don't you?
More, maybe even.
Okay, let's leave it there, eh? We'll talk to you next week, Alan.
We shall.
Thank you, and enjoy the supermoon tonight.
Absolutely, and your listeners too. See you guys.
See ya.
That was Dear Science. That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.